Hello, everyone. Welcome to episode 7 of the 2QB Experience. This is the Jimmy Garoppolo Experience. I'm one of your hosts. My name is Greg Smith, at Greg Suss on Twitter. On the line, as always, your other host, Joshua Lake. Josh, what is happening?
Mock drafts are happening. It has been an exciting week. We kicked off a bunch of mock drafts on Monday, kind of thinking, you know, we'll throw it out there. Maybe we'll get one or maybe two mock drafts full. Maybe some crazy people in the middle of May will be interested in some mock drafts. And lo and behold, 2 days later, we have 6 mock drafts running. It's just madness how many people are interested and just how many 2QB leagues are opening up. People who are saying, I've never done this before. I want to get some practice ahead of time. It's been fun to see. It's a lot more interest than the last couple of years when we were doing this.
Yeah, it turns out there are a lot of crazy people out there, in fact, and they all want to draft 2QB leagues. And man, I'm happy to oblige them. I don't know about you. It's been fun to be involved. Like, I'm in a couple of the mocks myself, seeing some of the picks where these guys are landing. It's been a trip. Like, some of the ADP we're seeing after, you know, the first few rounds is really surprising. Like, certain quarterbacks falling, quarterbacks in general falling, and we'll have, you know, all that data posted eventually. But I don't know, is there anything else that jumps out to you, like, from the results of, you know, the drafts as a whole or your mocks in particular, Josh, that have stood out to you?
Yeah, well, your point is a good one, that quarterbacks are just falling like crazy. I am myself, I have 2 teams in these mocks, and in both of them, I just haven't felt any rush at all to draft a quarterback, because every time I scan the last few draft picks, there's never quarterbacks in it. They just keep falling. And the other is, like you said, the ADP is kind of all over the place right now because there isn't really an established order yet. ESPN probably has rankings up, Yahoo probably does, but people aren't just tied to those yet. Right now, people are kind of feeling it out, testing the waters, seeing what they want to do. And so it's fun to see that these drafts have results kind of all over the place. It's a good time to experiment and see what you want to do with this season.
Yeah, I'm certainly curious to see how much of these picks, you know, turn out to have been experimentation versus people actually drafting the way they would have drafted, you know, if their home league was starting now. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, I know that I try to draft the same all the time, if only to figure out, like, what I don't like about my own strategy. I don't dabble too much in, you know, other, you know, avenues, but in this particular case, in the 2 mocks that I'm in, I've drafted a quarterback by the 4th or 5th round both times, and that's not always how I do things. I think I'm pretty well known at this point on the podcast, at least, for being a late-round quarterback guy. But I've ended up with Drew Brees in one league and Ben Roethlisberger in the other just because they fell far enough to the point where they seem like a value. And it's fun to see that happening, and it's a pretty strong reaction to last year's, you know, quarterback results. I'm pretty sure it's an overreaction, to be honest.
Yeah, I think both at quarterback and running back, just seeing how, I mean, there's so many wide receivers in the top 20 right now. It's just, it's kind of crazy to see. And that may balance out some, but I think you're right. It's just it's a reaction to last season. I mean, 10 of the top 20 picks right now, I'm looking at our live ADP. Like you said, we'll post it all at some point, but right now, fully half of the first 2 rounds are wide receivers. It's just, people are saying, well, last year, early running backs and early quarterbacks didn't pay out, so I'm not going to do it this year. And I agree with you. It's too reactionary. There's a reason to take wide receivers early, but I just think we're overdoing it as a community right now.
See, and as a late-round QB guy, I actually don't think we're overdoing it on the quarterbacks. I think we're finally starting to see them be fairly valued, or at least a little more fairly valued. In terms of the running backs, though, that's something I've long harped on. I've never been a zero RB guy. I don't necessarily think that strategy is always going to be correct. I understand that there are certain leagues and league types where that sort of strategy can pay off and be worthwhile, but using it as just as gospel or as a default position just doesn't work for me. Now, if running backs are lasting this long, as we're seeing in our current results, then yeah, I guess maybe zero RB does exist, if only because that's the status quo. But At this point, it actually feels like that's the best place to get value to me. Based upon the limited data that we're seeing, I want to draft running backs while all these other people are fighting over wide receivers in the top 3 rounds.
Right. It is this very bizarre. I mean, anyone that's played for more than 2 years will feel just how bizarre this year is, that there's been a gradual kind of a sea change that has taken place over the last few years, where it used to be that running backs were everything, and now they're just nothing. It's such a, like, the contrarian view is completely switched, that early running back is now the contrarian position. And I think you and I are both of like mind in that we want to be breaking from whatever is the default draft strategy, just so that we can find those values. And it does look like it's running back this year.
Yeah, I can't wait to see how the rest of these mocks play out. We'll be hosting more as the preseason or the offseason plays out here. So if you want to join a mock, Josh, you've been hosting most of these or setting most of these up for the most part. Do you want to let people know how they can get in on the 2QB mocks if they want to join in?
Yeah, for sure. The more the merrier. We have kind of an ongoing wait list. We started up a new mock draft today. We're recording on Tuesday. But the best way, if you're interested, is to shoot us a message on Twitter at 2QBs, TWOQBS. Shoot us a message, and particularly DM us, direct message us your email address, because that email address is where we'll send the invites to. So these are, one thing we should say is these mock drafts are slow drafts. So you have an 8 hour pick timer. So that doesn't mean everyone's taking 8 hours, but it's something where you can draft during the workday. You don't have to be looking at your screen, either your phone or your computer, all day. You can get an email or a text message when it's your turn to pick, but you also have plenty of time to make the pick. So it's designed for people with real lives. It's not that you're tied to your computer at a set time.
It's funny that you say that they're designed for people with real lives while we're drafting fantasy football teams in May.
Who pretend to have real
It's
lives.
just I can hear the Alanis Morissette, song faintly in the background.
I don't get the reference, I'm going to be honest with you.
That ironic song?
Okay.
Isn't it ironic? You don't know that song?
I don't know it at all.
Oh man, I
I have
gotta
no pop culture knowledge at all.
brush
I'll
you up
admit that
on
now.
female 90s pop stars. Come on, Josh.
I
Wow. I think
know.
this podcast is over. I think we just need to click the
Just, it was a good
drop
run.
call button. Let's move on. Unlike last episode, I'm going to get to this right off the top. We need to talk about the Scott Fishbowl. And we actually have an entry to give away to this to one of our listeners. And you want to be in the Scott Fishbowl. Let me tell you, this is an event, a fantasy football spectacular, if you will. 480 teams, 320 experts, and a bunch of fans, whatever the math works out there. Come on, don't make me do it in my head.
160.
Thanks, Josh. That's why you're
Yeah.
here. You're the numbers guy. We have an entry to give away to this contest. Prizes, random prizes, winning prizes across the board. Just as an example, last year, lifetime subscriptions were given away to Football Guys, Dynasty League Football. Year-long subscriptions were given away to those sites, RotoViz, 4 for 4, so on and so forth. All these awesome fantasy football, gold mines are just giving away their wares, if you will, to the people who compete in this league. And on top of that, you just get to experience the joy of a two quarterback league against these experts, the best in the business. Basically, any big name fantasy site you can think of, their analysts and writers and personalities will be involved in the Scott Fishbowl, and you can get in. It's very simple. Josh, you want to tell them how they can do it?
Yeah, so for our entry, I mean, there's plenty of other ways to win, but here's the way you want to win. We are giving away one free entry to the Scott Fishbowl, and the way you are entered in the raffle is that you rate and review our podcast, the podcast you are currently listening to, on iTunes or whatever your primary method of listening to the podcast is. Then you take a screenshot of your review and you send it to us, either on Twitter at 2QBs or by email, 2QBs@gmail.com. And then next month, June, we're going to take all of those screenshots that we've got, mix them up in a metaphorical hat, and pull one out and let you know who won.
It's very simple. You can do
Very
it.
simple.
Yeah, you can do
Even I could do it. I already have a spot, but I could do it, is the point.
I would do it as well, but I also already have a spot. So just saying, if you want to compete against Josh, you want to compete against me, you want to compete against the entire fantasy football industry, this is a great way to do it. It's probably one of the only ways to do it in terms of, you know, a pros versus Joes situation where you're literally competing against everyone. And I don't know. I'm super excited to draft my team. It's not a true 2QB league, but it is super flex. So it jives real well with what we're doing at 2QBs.com. This is our format. And to be honest, Josh, I'm a little nervous that if we don't do well, that, you know, our site will be shamed.
It is quite the burden they've placed on us. But it's I tell you what, I've been in it 2 years now. I made the playoffs both years, but didn't go much further than that. But it is really an amazing thing because Scott, who runs this whole tournament, has people in it from, like, you see their tags, so it says where they write for. And just last year, I remember there were people drafting from ESPN, Yahoo, Fox Sports, SiriusXM's football, fantasy football programs, and all of the smaller sites as well. But it's just remarkable that you get to actually play in a league with a lot of these people that you have read and listened to.
And you can see a list of everybody at the Scott Fishbowl site. It's just scottfishbowl.com. You know, a link up at the top says SFB16 analysts, and we're on there. Everyone else is on there. It's a big deal, and you want to get in, so please rate and review the podcast. We're pandering to you as best we can with sweet prizes. We'd really appreciate your support. With that said, let's get moving. I have one other thing I want to talk about with what's going on at the site, 2QBs.com, for now at least. We have one other thing we'll get into later. But if you have been listening to the podcast for a while, you know that a while back we did a set of Twitter polls to set up a reader's set of rankings on the site. And Josh, we're going to do that again.
Sure. So in March, we did Twitter polls and ranked top down. So starting with QB1 versus QB2, and we just did straight polls to say, which would you rather draft? Assuming the price is the same, they're both on the board, which one would you take? And so we ranked them. I think we went 1 to 23, if memory serves. But what we're going to do in June is every day we're going to post a poll, but we're going to work from the bottom up. So we're going to take QB32 and QB31 in our rankings and say, if you get just one of these, which one are you going to take? And so we'll rank them again. And what that does is it really makes people decide between two options. When you have quarterbacks that we're ranking back to back, it means they're pretty close. And so it forces some tough decisions. It really helps you clarify in your mind, do I really like this player over this player? And then at the end of it, what we get is kind of an aggregate. Here's what the community thinks about these players. And so it just gives you, it's like ADP, but we also get some percentages to say just how much of the community would agree with this.
Yeah, you can see which quarterbacks are close and which quarterbacks, you know, aren't. You can also see quarterbacks really rise or really fall. I remember the last time we did this, poor Alex Smith, poor Tyrod Taylor, just plummeted down these rankings. And it'll be interesting to see how those guys shape up going forward, especially with, you know, now that we're post-draft. And we have a little bit more news. I mean, Sammy Watkins just broke his foot. How much further can Tyrod's fall? I'm already sad thinking about it.
It was quite the fall he had.
Yeah. So keep an eye out for those. Follow us at 2QBs on Twitter, and you'll see those polls. You can vote in them. Make your voice heard. Let us know exactly which one of these quarterbacks at one at a time or two at a time you like. And those will go right into the rankings. Those go up on the site. We want to, you know, make sure that not only are you getting the analyst's point of view on the site, you're also getting the community's point of view. With that said, let's get into the main topic, Josh. Speaking of point of views and how we regard quarterbacks, we have kind of a big picture idea this week. And what we're talking about are the general archetypes of fantasy quarterbacks. And we're trying to group these guys together by the type of commodities they are. And so what we've done is we've created a list of, you know, general types of quarterbacks, you know, top tier every week starters, second tier every week starters, borderline QB1s, QB2s with upside, so on and so forth. We'll get to all the different, you know, titles and labels we've given these tiers a little bit later. But Josh and I each kind of grouped all of the quarterbacks from, say, the top 30 or top 40 into these sorts of groupings. And we want to discuss that with each other, but we also kind of want to bring to light, you know, exactly what type or what sort of value you can expect to get back from certain guys, or at least what our perception of those values currently are, and how to build a team around those. I mean, if you want to draft a top tier every week starter like Cam Newton, like Andrew Luck, Aaron Rodgers, Russell Wilson, you're going to have to pay the price for those. And we want to talk about how that impacts your team, and how that impacts your draft strategy, what you need to look for after you get those quarterbacks, or, you know, before you get the, you know, the later round values. So Josh, let's start at the top. Are you cool with that?
Seems logical to me.
Okay. Top tier every week starters. This is our first group. Now, this seems pretty clear cut to me, and I do want to throw in a quick caveat that these are not necessarily the same as tiered rankings. We're not saying that everyone who's in this tier deserves to be, you know, drafted ahead of everyone else on the list. And the reason I bring this up is because I have Tom Brady listed in this category, but Tom Brady's going to miss 4 games. So we have to factor into our draft analysis how much of a penalty do we want to assign to Tom Brady because of those games he's missing. Does he slide, you know, below a person like a player like Big Ben or Tony Romo or Carson Palmer? Or does the per game value that Brady gives you, plus, you know, whatever replacement level value you can get later in the draft, does that still mean that Tom Brady needs to be ranked higher? We don't have to talk about the rankings, but in terms of players that in, you know, any given week you consider top tier every week starters, who's on your list?
Yeah, so apart from the draft price one is interesting, because when I went through and kind of breaking these quarterbacks into tiers, I hadn't really processed what I would do with Brady. I was looking at just assume they're on your roster and they're playing that week. How would you value them?
Yeah, that's exactly the way that I look at it as well.
Okay, because I have Brady in this top tier. For me, and apparently I am not in line with the community on this one, because I see a very, very clear 8 quarterbacks that are far better than the rest, and I don't put Blake Bortles in it, but everyone else seems to. So to me, it's the, what I call the top 8, which are pretty consensus, except I would have Bortles out and I'd have Carson Palmer in. And so the rest of the names are the typical ones that really don't need a lot of mentioning, other than Roethlisberger and Palmer are the two kind of bottom end ones that make it in.
Yeah, so for me, it's the top 6. It's Luck, Newton, Rodgers, Wilson, Breeze, and Brady. And I actually lump those other two, Roethlisberger and Palmer, plus one other guy in the what we're calling the second tier every week starters. Now, this is a little silly in the sense that if you're in a 10-team league, there are probably 10 quarterbacks that should be considered every week starters, or that's what we would want. But that's not necessarily the case, right?
Yeah, it is really interesting to try and put this point on it to say these are every week starters, because to me, just blindly, not looking at schedule, I have to ask myself, can I say I would start this guy every week? I'm not going to look at the matchups. I'm going to start him. And it does get tough, because instinctively I want to put more guys into that category, but you're right. It just gets so deep at some point that you have well more than just 10 or just 12, even if you go too far.
Yeah, the quarterback middle class is really, really big right now. And it's the same as, you know, in America, there's like an upper middle class, there's a, you know, a true middle class, and there's a lower middle class. And then there are, you know, the bargain basement type of commodities. But yeah, for me, if we're talking about every week starters, my list is 9 deep. It's those 6 guys I mentioned before, plus Roethlisberger, Palmer, and Tony Romo, assuming health, right? Those 3 are what I consider the second tier every week starters. I don't necessarily like them as much as the top 6. I think Roethlisberger is definitely the closest, and maybe he deserves to be in that, you know, top tier. But I don't know. I've been burned by him in the past. I think that's part of the problem that I have with, you know, elevating him to that top tier status.
Yeah, that was going to be my question, is what for you? So we're calling both of these groups every week starters. And so for you, what is distinguishing the first group from the second group?
Honestly, it's probably just track record more than anything else. And a lot of that has to do with health. You know, we did see Luck get injured last year. We've seen Rodgers get injured before. But for the most part, Luck, Newton, Rodgers, Wilson, Breeze, and Brady have, on the whole, been very healthy. And even the guys who have been hurt are still relatively young, to the point where I expect them to deliver, because I don't expect their bodies to be breaking down necessarily. Roethlisberger tends to get dinged up a little bit, although he guts it out a lot of the time. I have to, you know, give him credit for that. But Romo and Palmer do scare me from an age standpoint. I think that, you know, Breeze and Brady probably should as well. But, you know, based upon what they've shown us to this point in their career, I am less concerned about them. And I do believe that their production has been a little bit more elite than guys like Romo and Palmer.
Okay.
So you kind of had eight guys in your top tier. How did you distinguish between that and the second tier guys? And who are the second tier guys on your list?
So I have eight in the top tier, and then I have four that I would also call every week starters. So I get to 12, like for a 12 teamer, everyone could theoretically have one that I would start every week. And my four, I do have Romo there, but then I have what I consider kind of a trio of quarterbacks that, at least in MFL 10 ADP, they're very much the same as each other. Eli Manning, Phillip Rivers, and Andy Dalton. And I'm way higher on Andy Dalton than most people are. So I think that one's very debatable, but I don't think that Eli and Phillip Rivers should be. But just from the way you're describing it, I think I didn't look at it quite the same way as far as injury risks and concerns. I was looking at it just as week one, except for Brady, who isn't going to play the first 4 weeks, but the first week each of these quarterbacks plays, am I going to be comfortable just plugging them in, or am I going to be looking at their matchup and making a decision based on the matchup? And so for these 12, I felt comfortable saying that week one, I don't care who they're playing, I'm willing to plug them in and start them, no questions asked. And so whether they're going to have a little bit of like hiccups and things along the way or not, I feel good about these quarterbacks regardless of who they're playing. And for these four, I do think that they will have more down weeks than those top eight. I think those are your consistent top scorers. They're going to be inside the top 10 more than half of their games, is kind of what I would expect. Whereas the Eli Rivers, Dalton, and Romo will have those weeks. They'll be reliable, but I don't know that you will get as many QB1 scores out of them. But I also think they are very safe. I think they have good options around them in the passing game, and I feel much more comfortable starting them. I feel safer about starting them than I do kind of all the quarterbacks afterwards. I see another pretty decent breaking point after the top 12.
Yeah, so we definitely had different philosophies when it came to ranking these guys within these groups. And I think that's interesting, because I do believe it shows a little bit in terms of our philosophies when it comes to drafting quarterbacks. You're willing to consider Eli Manning, Phillip Rivers, Andy Dalton, essentially every week starters, guys that you would be comfortable with as your QB1. And I don't think that's incorrect. I believe that that's fine. And I will probably have a few teams this year where one of those dudes is my quarterback one. With that said, I tend to view it, I guess I was viewing it more in terms of talent tier, and that was kind of how I lumped these guys together. So you had Manning, or Eli Manning, and Rivers. Oh man, I just realized this. I don't have to distinguish between the Mannings anymore. Peyton retired.
It's a whole new era.
It's like a giant weight has been lifted off my shoulders, Josh.
Your life is much simpler.
Oh, it's so much easier now. Sorry, I digressed. But you have Manning and Rivers kind of in that second tier every week starters. I buried them like two groups deeper in the solid, boring QB2s category.
Yeah, and I will shill for Rivers for a minute, just because I've written about him on our site, and then just this week I wrote about him on RotoViz as well. And he is ultra consistent, that over the last 2 years, he has had a top 12 week half of his games. And if you expand it back to 2008, so what is that, a seven season horizon? He is still 55% of the time a QB1. And I think that you get really good production out of him, that he's very consistent on a season-long basis. And I do think that the weapons around him help. I think that Keenan Allen is an incredible receiver, and I think that Travis Benjamin will also help a lot. And so he, to me, will have more down weeks than those top-tier elite guys. I totally agree with you that there is a talent difference. But I do feel comfortable plugging him in and saying there's really good odds I'll get a QB 1 week out of him. I may not get it as often as I will the elite guys, but I still have pretty good odds, much better than I do kind of the guys I see as boring QB2s who rarely are going to get into that QB1 tier on any given week.
Yeah, Rivers is an interesting case. He has been super consistent in terms of games played. 16 games per season dating back to 2012. In that span, though, his average finish, like in terms of, you know, QB finish on a week, has never gotten above 12. He's never averaged, you know, being a top 12 guy. I mean, in 2013, his average finish was 12.9. That's the best he's done. So to me, that inherently makes him a QB2. Now, averages are weird. I should, you know, throw that out there, that, you know, saying that somebody averages something doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, that's indicative of their overall performance, because like you said, he does put up a fair number of QB1 level weeks. And the fact that he does play every game is also very important in terms of a two quarterback league. With that said, I still view him as, you know, kind of a QB2 with the upside to occasionally be an in-week quarterback one. I never anticipate he's going to be, you know, a top 12 guy in a week unless he is in a good matchup for some reason. And maybe my thinking on this is flawed, but I just see him more as a quarterback too, along the lines of Manning, along the lines of, I mean, honestly, like guys like Ryan Fitzpatrick and Matthew Stafford. Rivers has been more consistent than those guys. And so I see your point in terms of, you know, elevating him to a higher status in terms of where you consider him. But to me, I'm very willing as a drafter to say, okay, Rivers is going to be more consistent than a guy like Ryan Fitzpatrick or Matthew Stafford. But I can wait many more rounds after Rivers gets drafted to take one of those other guys and try to make up the value in different ways, because quarterbacks are inherently relatively predictable. And as we've seen, and as we discussed last week when Brian Malone was on, or not last week, but last episode, quarterbacks tend to be volatile from year to year. So I don't know. I'm kind of talking in circles at this point, but I guess I don't see the value drop off from a guy like Rivers to Stafford or Flacco or Alex Smith that drastic in terms of the difference that they have in draft capital. I feel like, and that is part of how I viewed this, was if I'm thinking about top tier every week starters, I'm thinking about guys I'm willing to invest like a pick in the first four rounds on, or the first three rounds on. And that's why I came up with six guys. And then when I think of, you know, the next guys, the guys who belong in that round three to round six range, I was thinking about Roethlisberger, Romo, and Palmer. And then after that, honestly, like, it all kind of just blurs together into one big melting pot. And then you have to decide, okay, do I want a consistent guy? Do I want a guy with upside like Tyrod Taylor or Jameis Winston? So I don't know. this is kind of degenerated. I thought that our lists were going to be so much closer, to be honest.
It is interesting how we really did view it differently. And I could go on and on about Rivers, but I think we've covered him specifically enough. But it just, at a big picture, it is interesting how we view it differently. I think partly it just comes from definitionally how we started things. Is I was looking much more at just week one, do I feel comfortable? I will start these guys, and going forward, I should be able to for the whole season. Whereas you looked at it from a little different perspective of, do I expect that I will be starting them every week for the whole season? And so I guess the way to put that point, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, I think you were more looking at, is it possible that another quarterback is going to surpass them as the season goes on? Whereas I was looking at just from a blank slate at the beginning, which guys could I pick now and say I will keep playing them through the year without looking at who else might be on my roster.
Yeah, that's a very good way of describing the way I looked at this. And I think it does illustrate how I view the quarterback position. It also, I mean, in that way, it shows that I don't necessarily look at a quarterback. I don't look at quarterbacks and say, okay, I want to start this guy all year. I just never do that. When it comes to, you know, drafting quarterbacks or picking a quarterback up off waivers, I'm thinking about, okay, how often am I going to use this guy? Am I going to use this guy, you know, half the time? Am I only going to use him when his matchup is excruciatingly good, you know, high over under, you know, a good team implied total, all that good stuff, a poor defense against. And I guess that's how I stratified these guys. I said, okay, if I had to pick a certain number of quarterbacks that I would just start blindly every week, that list is six guys deep. And, or those, that's like the top tier. And if I had to expand that to like a few more guys, then I have nine total. I add in Roethlisberger, Romo, and Palmer. So let's keep going with some of these categories we've come up with, because the discussion is interesting, the way that like you view it versus the way I view it. It's okay that we disagree, because we're going to get, I think, different value out of, you know, the explanation behind both sides.
Right. And I will, letting us move on, I just want to put a pin in it for a later episode closer to draft season, that I think that'll make for a really interesting discussion of what does that do to our draft strategies.
Yeah, for sure. So our next category is what we call borderline QB1s / QB2s with upside. Who's on your list, Josh?
So for me, like I said, Bortles I think less of than the community does. I would put him and Cousins here, whereas some people have them higher. But then along with them, I would also have Tyrod Taylor and then Mariota and Winston, the young guys. Those to me are the ones that I feel confident they are going to be QB2s, and I think that they are all pushing to be QB1s. Now, I have 12 quarterbacks ahead of them, so they're not QB1s for me, but I think that it's very plausible. These are the guys I could see supplanting some of the names I gave because they have more upside and they are less certain than the ones I called every week starters at the outset.
Yeah, so I think we're starting to get a little bit more overlap, and I think that does have to do with that word upside that we put in the category, right? This is where you hear the word upside and you think, oh, well, that means younger players, new players, right? Guys that we don't have a track record for. The world is their oyster. They could, you know, go as far as the moon, or they could, you know, explode like the Challenger. But I have Taylor, Winston, Mariota in this tier, but I have Bortles and Cousins further down. I don't trust those guys. I know that you said you were down on them in general. I am also down on them, I guess, more, or at least more in terms of how I broke these groups up. The other guys I have in this group with Taylor, Winston, and Mariota are Andy Dalton, and this may be a hot take, but I still have Matt Ryan here. I think you had Dalton in your second tier every week starters. I think that's fair. If he shows in 2016 what he showed last year, he definitely deserves to be considered in that, you know, Carson Palmer class of quarterback. So I couldn't help but, you know, give him credit for that and include him in this group. But yeah, here in this tier, I really only have five guys, and I do see that the same way as you, where these guys to me are the players who could leapfrog the guys who are further up on the list and actually finish as, you know, overall QB1s, or guys who in general have more QB1 weeks than the rest of the guys on the list.
Yeah, I think the most intriguing name there is definitely Matt Ryan. I think that is kind of hot takey to have him there. I have him in the next group, but I just don't know that there is the upside. I don't think they put enough weapons around him to think he has more upside than he's shown. And I also wrote about Matt Ryan for our site. And I wrote that I like him, but I like him because I think he's been miscast as a QB1 in past years because he doesn't have that upside. And I kind of made the argument that I think he's a perfect QB2, and I'm going to have him in the boring QB2 category that you mentioned earlier, because I think he's great there, that he's good enough, he's reliable enough, he's throwing to Julio, but I just don't know that I think we have a long enough track record to say he probably doesn't have the upside to push his way into the top 10, top 8 under almost any set of circumstances this year. So that's why I have a tough time saying there's upside, even though I do like him. It's kind of weird to be saying those two things at the same time.
Yeah, you may be right. I probably am overvaluing him in general, but I guess the reason I'm willing to give him that perceived upside is because we've seen it before. We're 4 years removed from it at this point, so maybe that's why my thinking is flawed. But we did see him put up that QB1 season in 2012 and put up, you know, respectable enough seasons in 2013, 2014. I do feel like 2015 is weighing a little too heavily on his, you know, fantasy stock. I don't think he's as bad as we saw last year. I mean, perception of him was pretty high coming into last season. He didn't deliver on that. And I don't know. I do think that maybe the upside is there, but you might be right. Just the weapons might not be, his weapons might not be good enough.
Yeah. And it's not that they're bad. I think he'll be very serviceable and be a good option this year, but I don't know that he can get to that 2012 level again. I think there's too many good fantasy quarterbacks now.
Yeah, see, I just don't see a whole lot to distinguish him from the Eli Mannings, from the Philip Rivers. And to be fair, like, the more I'm thinking about this and as we're talking about it, I probably should have him in the next tier, which we're calling solid, boring QB2s. And that list is extensive for me. Because, like I said before, that's where I have Manning and Rivers. Yeah, I don't know. I guess Ryan, before last season, did show a little bit more consistency than a guy like Eli Manning did. And we have seen him put up that QB1 season before. I guess we have seen it from Manning and Rivers and Bortles as well. So I think it's fair to lump all those guys together, but I don't know.
Yeah, and just to and I will throw out the disclaimer at the beginning that I'm using your own work against you because I'm relying on your database of stats here. But just looking at Rivers and Ryan just in the last couple of years, Rivers has been a top 10 quarterback 43% of the time. He's had 7 top 10 weekly finishes in each of the last 2 years, whereas Matt Ryan's last 2 years. So, yeah, last year was bad, but he only got 7 combined in his last 2 years, 7 top 10 finishes. And he's 20 and 25% of weeks been a top 10 finisher. And so I tend to think he could do better than that, but I don't know that he can even get to Rivers' level of QB1 consistency. And so I struggle with where the upside is, even though I do think he's going to be a good overlooked fantasy option.
I think you've convinced me. I don't know what else to say, but yeah, I think that you've doused my hot take flames. I'm ready to move Matt Ryan down. I just looked at my own rankings of these quarterbacks, and I have you know, Rivers ranked higher than Ryan, so it is a little silly of me to have included him here. Maybe I just wanted to spur discussion subconsciously or something, but.
No, but it's tough because Ryan, like you said, Ryan was that guy. I mean, he blew up in 2012, 9 top 10 finishes, just blew everything out of the water. So he has shown he can be that guy. I don't know that he can do it anymore, I guess, is my concern.
So this is kind of a sidebar, but what do you think the difference was that season? Was it just that Roddy White was still an actual NFL player?
I think that's probably – that was helpful. And I think that the state of NFL quarterbacking was very different, like fantasy quarterbacking. And I think that Ryan is not too far different from the same player he was, but now we just have a lot more passing offenses. We have a lot more elite wide receivers. It's not just – Julio and a couple others. And so I think that while Ryan hasn't changed a whole lot, I think that the weapons around him, like you said, the loss of Roddy White, but I think more than that, it's his competition just kind of pushes him down the QB tier list.
Yeah. I glossed over Tony Gonzalez as well. That's a pretty big loss.
Oh, for sure. That's a good one.
So yeah, fair enough. Let's get into this next group, solid, boring QB2s. And I'll admit defeat. I'll slide Matt Ryan down here to join Eli, Rivers, Bortles, Derek Carr, Fitzpatrick, Matthew Stafford, Joe Flacco, and Alex Smith. That's my list.
We have a lot of overlap here, so rather than agree with you on a whole lot of them, I'll tell you a couple I have in there that you don't, and then one that you have that I just don't know what to do with. So two that I have in there, Jay Cutler, fits this category for me. That I think injury is my concern, but if he's healthy and playing, I feel like, yeah, whatever. I'll throw him in as a QB too. Like if he's the quarterback that falls to me in a draft, that's fine. I'll throw him in there. I'm not too worried about him. And then the other that is probably one of my hot takey ones is that I think Teddy Bridgewater is going to be here this year. He wasn't last year, but I think that he is going to be a reliable, boring QB2 this year. I think that the chaos and turmoil at several in several NFL teams at the quarterback position is going to mean that there's a lot of uncertainty, a lot of transitions back and forth, quarterback battles, and I think that Teddy Bridgewater is going to be better than those and is going to be kind of right there at the bottom end of the QB2, but I think he's a guy that's going to improve off of last year. I think he's going to have a little bit better fantasy performance, and I do think that Laquon Treadwell, having another talented receiver coming in, will help him. And so I would expect that he ends up in this category, even though last year he didn't look like it at all.
I think that's fine. It's you're assuming a lot. I shouldn't
For
say
sure, for sure.
it's yeah, you're definitely speculating, and I'm not saying that you will be wrong. I'm just saying there's to me there's a good chance you could be wrong, that he'll have, plenty of serviceable weeks, but there'll be a lot of times when he falls in that, QB 20 to QB 24 range. And while technically in a 12-team league that still counts as, a QB2, that doesn't necessarily distinguish him all that much from the guy who finished as QB25. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, it's true, and I struggled with whether he is this or a streamer, but I am assuming a lot to say I think he makes a significant enough step that he's not just a streamer. So yeah, you're totally right. It has not been shown yet.
And that's fine. I mean, that's part of the fun of fantasy football, is that every once in a while you do have to go out on that ledge, right? You have to say, okay, I'm gonna take that step, Indiana Jones style, out into what seems like an abyss and hope that, the Teddy Bridgewater invisible bridge catches me, right? Did you get that reference?
I like it. I like it.
Okay. So, yeah, I mean, and I get the Cousins and Cutler. I think that they could also be considered solid, boring QB2s. Cutler, I think, has just proven to me to be a little too wild in terms of his finishes. And in general, I guess maybe I'm holding too much against him for not performing at like a top 10 level or a top 12 level very often. But looking at this data that we were talking about earlier, he had top 10 finishes in only one game last year, only two games in 2013, only four games in 2012. I glossed over 2014 where he had six. That was definitely a very good year for Cutler. But the point I'm trying to make here is that his production, unlike a guy like Rivers or Matt Ryan, has generally been very inconsistent, and he's a lot more likely to deliver like a dud performance than some other players. Bad weeks, and that's the kind of stuff that I don't really want from my boring, dependable QB2s. I want Alex Smith. I want Joe Flacco. I want those guys who are basically going to, just give me a solid 14 to 18 points every week. And I honestly, I just don't trust Cutler to do that. And I don't yet trust Cousins to do that. We saw one good year from him last year. I feel like everything broke right for him in 2015. The way you view Bridgewater as a guy who could make a leap forward, I see Cousins as a severe candidate to take a step back, at least relative to what he did last year. I'm ready to be proven wrong, but at the same time, Cousins falls into the next group for me, the streamers group.
Yeah, I have a hard time making the Kirk Cousins argument. As a Redskins fan, I'm convinced that this is all just a mirage and he becomes terrible this year so that we lose all hope yet again. So I won't make the argument that I guess I'm torn because if he is who he was last year, he's higher than either you or I had him, that he's
That's
an
right.
every week starter.
That's right.
And if he is dreadful, then he's garbage, but I just don't know. We both think he's going to fall in between those two, but it's just a question of where exactly that falls, and that's hard to project. Neither of us thinks he is that every week starter, but just how much worse is he than he looked last year?
And maybe I'm being a little more unfair to him because if you compare him to a guy like Winston or Mariota, who I have, you know, two groups higher, or even Bortles, who I have one group higher, what's the difference, right? These guys are all kind of 1 year. We've only seen one true full season from any all of those guys, and I'm ready to knock Kirk Cousins down to be a borderline QB2 or like a streaming candidate, whereas I'm considering Bortles a boring QB2 and Winston and Mariota borderline QB1s. Is that really fair? Probably not. But that is just that part of it comes down to, you know, gut feeling, the research I've done, data wise, that I don't expect the same level of performance from Bortles or from Cousins. And in Cousins' case, I expect that regression to be a little bit more steep.
Well, and I think that's fair. I want to come back to Jay Cutler just for a minute to sure. defend him a little bit. Because you nailed the perception of him that he has these dud weeks, but I think that the last few years, at least in Chicago, it's been much more an issue with injuries than it has been with dud weeks when he's playing the whole week.
That's fair.
You mentioned Joe Flacco, and Joe Flacco has actually, he more often over the last 4 years finishes outside of the top 25 quarterbacks in a week than Jay Cutler ever did in those weeks. So Jay Cutler is about 20% of the time in that terrible tier. Joe Flacco is about 25% of the time. So that's not, I'm not saying it's statistically significant, but just that I think they're closer than people really have in their minds. People say, oh, Flacco, he's reliable, he's dependable, he'll be boring. Cutler is boom or bust. But really, they're not that different from one another in terms of statistically what they do week to week. I think they both land in that boring QB2 week most of the time when they're healthy. And so I think that I would agree with you that I'm much more worried about Cutler staying on the field and caring about the game. But I'm not sure that I worry as much about a bust week if he's playing.
That's fair. And that does come back to that idea that you're looking at, if I have 1 week where every single quarterback is healthy, how do I regard that player? And I'm looking at more as, you know, over the course of the year, which guys profile as these types of commodities, and the injury concerns with Cutler are what that really is what bumps him down to that, you know, one tier lower than a guy like Flacco. But you're right, they're very similar.
And that's fair. I mean, he has missed not a lot of time, but he seems to miss time every year. So I totally get where you're coming from.
So our next group is what we're calling borderline QB2s or streamers. You know, we just got through the solid, boring QB2s. My list includes Cousins, Cutler, and Bridgewater, who you had in the next group up. And I've also included Ryan Tannehill and Brock Osweiler here. These are guys that I want to put them in that solid, boring QB2 range. And I think that all of these guys have the potential to be there. I just trust them a little bit less than all the names I had in the previous tier, you know, Alex Smith, Joe Flacco, and so on. Who do you have in this group, Josh?
Yeah, for me, this is a really large group because I tend to look at these borderline QB2 streamers as the ones I'm drafting, hoping they turn into something. And they may not, but I threw almost all of the guys we have not named into this category. I had a few that I had trouble placing in our category, so some that I think have a little more upside than this category suggests if we're just talking borderline QB2 streamer types.
And who are those guys?
Like RG3 is a good example of, I don't know that he's going to be like a streamer in the sense that he's just lingering. I think he's either going to be really good or just really dreadful and gets benched.
Yep, that's why I put him in the next group. But he's the closest I have to entering this, you know, streamer category.
Right. And so like I had trouble with him. I had trouble with Stafford because I think he's not solid and boring, but I also don't know that he's streamer level bad. But anyway, leaving those two out, I throw almost everyone else that has a starting job into here. So Jared Goff goes in here for me. Sam Bradford goes in here for me. Mark Sanchez, for the time being, is in here. And like I said, I had trouble deciding whether Teddy Bridgewater should go here or be that solid, boring type. But for me, the borderline guys, the guys that I will draft to stream or to hope they hit, basically, if you have a starting job, I'll throw you into this category. But that's kind of, again, going back to us viewing it differently, this is me just week one. I'll throw everybody into this category and see how it shakes out. Whereas I think you kind of made some more distinctions about what how you expect their seasons to be playing out.
Sure, but your point is a good one in that ultimately, if you're looking beyond those top, whatever it is, top 15, top 20 guys that we listed all the way through, you know, solid, boring QB2s, after that, it kind of doesn't matter. You kind of just need to look at who has the best matchup in a given week. And that's what makes them a streamer, right? You say, okay, well, I don't necessarily trust Jared Goff, but this week they're playing against the Saints. Fire him up, get him in the lineup, you know?
Right, right. And they're all kind of, yeah, I mean, they're basically the same. You may like one more than you like the other, but going into drafts, I don't know that there are strong cases to be made for any of these guys.
Yeah, so I guess we might as well talk about who the other categories that we created here. And the last one, and this is what I called QB3s or bye week plays or short-term fantasy stopgaps. When I think about these types of players, I'm thinking at the beginning of the season when I'm drafting, I hope I don't have to play these guys very often. And with that, I also have in the back of my mind, you know, if they prove that they are, you know, ascending, if they're jumping up a couple levels, then I'll gladly play them more. Like, don't get me wrong. But in terms of the way I perceive them right now, guys who I would rather not have as, you know, my reliable starters, that's Robert Griffin III. That's, you know, Geno Smith, or assuming that, you know, Ryan Fitzpatrick doesn't start the season or join the Jets. Goff, Blaine Gabbert. I have Paxton Lynch and Mark Sanchez in here. I don't know which one of them is going to be the starter yet, so, you know, treat them both kind of the same. Sam Bradford, Carson Wentz, same thing. And I threw Jimmy Garoppolo in here as well as a guy who, you know, if I have to depend on him for 4 weeks or for 2 weeks, I'm okay with that. But if I'm projecting out for an entire season and I have to say, okay, I want Jimmy Garoppolo to play for, you know, 8 weeks. Hell no. I don't want that. That sounds terrible.
Right, but, right.
So that's kind of my general philosophy here. And it does line up, I think, with what you're saying is that, you know, in any given week, any of these guys could be usable. There's no doubt about that.
Right. And this will all become much more clear. And you and I will probably get closer together in how we view this when we know more about who is starting for which team. Because your point's a good one that right now, several of these quarterbacks that we're talking about, you can't rely on. You've got to hope they have a starting job. So if you're drafting now, it's very different than if you're drafting in August. And just as a quick anecdote, even as late as August last year, I remember going into my home league draft, and we draft in person every year. We've been doing it since 2003.
It's the best.
And so I had to travel for it. And so I'm driving back several hours, and I'm listening to the radio, listening to podcasts. And I very vividly remember that the whole RG3 versus Kirk Cousins thing was just starting to happen. Like, oh, wow, they're reporting that RG3 might actually have a concussion and maybe he can't come back as early as thought. And so I ended up in that draft drafting Kirk Cousins in this QB3 bye week play category, saying he's probably not any good. He may not even get a starting job, but I will hold him. And so I had him on my roster, and we have really shallow benches in that league. We only have 5 spots. And I held him for 6 weeks and then dropped him because for the first part of the season, that's who he was. He was this, like, I hope I never have to play him type player. And so to your point, like, who knows? Things change pretty rapidly. And it's interesting to look at our names now, where I look at those names, Jared Goff, Blaine Gabbert, Mark Sanchez, and they all just sound like, who cares? I don't like these guys. But that's kind of why you draft them, is we don't know. Like Brian Malone pointed out, and you mentioned, year to year, there's a lot of change. We really can't predict these low-end guys that are going to come out of nowhere to become viable. And so you just kind of throw them out there, pick ones you like, and see what happens. But at least in my case, I didn't wait long enough.
Yeah, I had a very similar experience last season in one of my home leagues where, you know, started with Carson Palmer as my first quarterback, you know, late round QB style, because he was going pretty late. I drafted Tannehill shortly after that, thinking that Tannehill was going to, you know, have another great year. Boy, was I wrong about that. But I backed into Ryan Fitzpatrick because, you know, a QB run started and I needed to get a QB3 before they ran out. And lo and behold, he became, you know, my every week starter after a few weeks next to Carson Palmer, and Tannehill became my bench guy. So the shifts in value happen. They can happen slowly, like you saw with Cousins, but they can also happen pretty rapidly, and that's why, in general, kind of looking at all of this bottom tier as potential streamers is not a bad way to look at it. Just in general, a little bit more kind of philosophically how I segregated these lists. Everything up through borderline QB2s / like what I called streamers, you know, that Tannehill, Cousins, Cutler, Osweiler, Bridgewater group, everyone above that, that's my group of, you know, just generally dependable commodities, guys that I feel like I have a good handle on. I know what to expect. And that's why they ended up in those top five groups. And at this point, when we're in the, you know, the QB3s or the bye week plays, that's when you start to get into the question mark guys, right? The RG3s, the Jared Goffs, the Blaine Gabberts. And then deeper than that, like all these guys that are backing them up. That is our, you know, our next category after the QB3s. And that's where I have, you know, guys like Kaepernick, Josh McCown, Christian Hackenberg and Bryce Petty, Dak Prescott, Chase Daniel, AJ McCarron, Mike Glennon. I mean, basically any handcuff that you can think of. Those are the types of guys that I have lumped into this category. I'm assuming you have a similar approach, correct, Josh?
Yeah, I have very much those same names written down when we were talking about creating a category for bench stashes as those hot names. I mean, a tribute to Sal, 2QBFFB on Twitter, our good buddy and co-founder of the site. These are basically the guys that he has written about for years, the ones that he knows are valuable to 2QBers, and all it takes is an injury or a benching, and suddenly they become very, very important.
Yeah, and the thing that Sal gets absolutely right is that these guys almost always have more value than it takes to get them, because it's such a coin flippy thing sometimes, football. It's like, you know, all of a sudden somebody takes a weird hit, that quarterback is out for the rest of the year, and oh shit, Colt McCoy has to start, you know? And that's why if your bench is deep enough, these guys are worth stashing, just like you would a running back handcuff. It's a very similar proposition. We have one last category here, and this is, again, kind of a philosophical question I have for you, Josh. Is there such a thing as an unownable QB in a 2QB league?
I really struggled with this because I don't want to say it depends on the depth of your league, but I don't know how you get away from it. Because I will not label a player just in and of himself, a quarterback, I should say, a starting quarterback. I won't label a starting NFL quarterback as unownable just because in a two quarterback league, I think mostly they should all be owned. But depending on the depth of your league, if you're like my home league is still 10 teams, we only have a 5-man bench, I think you get a lot closer there to saying that maybe they are unownable. And for me, that probably is going to look like I don't know that I want to own Jared Goff, which is kind of sad. And I may be very wrong on that, but I look at a rookie going into that Rams offense and I really don't care. Like, I don't see the upside. He may have some QB2 weeks, but I don't know that I want him on my roster. But philosophically, I don't think that's the same as unownable. I think that's just more my philosophy of what I'm doing with those late spots.
Yeah, I think any quarterback who has a starting gig is ownable, and any quarterback who can easily come into a job is also ownable. And that's why my list of bench stashes is something like, you know, 20 names long. But in terms of the unownable guys, I suppose for me, it's the types of players who, again, depth matters, of course, but the backup QBs who, even if, you know, an injury happens, you're not even guaranteed that quarterback is going to last very long. And I guess you're right. You definitely have to have some restrictions on your bench spots to make this possible, because again, if anybody lucks into a starting quarterback spot, especially in like a 12-team 2QB league, then someone's going to pick that guy up almost automatically. It's very rare that a quarterback comes into a starting role and doesn't get picked up. But
right,
there are some guys that even after they get picked up and maybe get inserted into a lineup, or even if they just stay on the bench, there's a good chance that the owner will just never start that player because that player is very, very bad. And, you know, Case Keenum is a good example. But players like that, the Zach Mettenbergers, who, you know, again, has had startable weeks, but for the most part, we see that these guys are lower on their team's depth charts for a reason, right?
For sure.
Okay. So, yeah, just in general, I don't think there are necessarily official unownable quarterbacks in 2QB formats, but there are guys that, in general, you would like to avoid for better QBs if you can help it. I want to talk briefly. We've actually gone on this longer than I thought we would, Josh. not a bad thing. This discussion's been really interesting to me. But kind of talking about big picture draft strategy and how, you know, selecting certain types of quarterbacks can affect what you're doing with the rest of your draft. Now, we'll start simple. If you take, you know, Andrew Luck or Cam Newton in the first round of your draft, that means you're not getting Odell Beckham, Antonio Brown, so on and so forth. And do you want to talk a little bit about how you would approach certain types of QBs or how you would try to pair one group of QBs with another?
Yeah, I think that's an interesting topic that could also go on for a very long time. I'll say just personally, and I've written some and talked about it some, but I tend to prioritize that boring QB2 slot very centrally to my team. And so I know I can get them cheap, and I know that, like we talked about, that's a group with a lot of names in it. And I want to prioritize that, someone that I can plug and play at QB2 and then kind of play with and see what else falls to me for QB1. That doesn't always happen. So like you said, if I have an elite QB1, that's going to change things, and I probably wait even longer and don't get a reliable QB2. But I tend to really want to build a team that has a reliable plug-and-play QB2 and be more flexible at QB1, whether it's an elite guy or whether it's just another QB2 to slot in there, depending on what falls to me. But I really want at least one really boring, really reliable guy that has a solid floor and I'm not scared about starting him. And that seems to be my preference. I'm okay with those first rounds being either quarterback, running back, receiver, however it falls to me, more best player than anything.
Yeah, I try to be really flexible with my drafts in that I would really love to have guys from those top tiers, you know, the Lux, the Rodgers, the Russell Wilsons, the Breezes, the Bradys, you know, so on and so forth. But in general, I want to feel like I'm getting a bargain on whoever I take. So more often than not, I miss out on those top guys and I end up with, you know, someone from that next tier down, you know, the Romo, the Palmer, the Dalton as my QB1. And then after that, it's kind of the same waiting game over again, where I think to myself, okay, well, how many quarterbacks are left? Where do I feel like I'm finally getting a value on a QB relative to the other quarterbacks who have been selected? Like, I always want to get the last guy in a tier, right? It doesn't always work out like that, of course. When, you know, your plans blow up in your face and you think you're going to back into, you know, Marcus Mariota at the end of the QB2s with upside tier, but he gets taken right before you, and then you're stuck looking at guys like Derek Carr and Matt Ryan and Eli Manning instead. Sometimes I'll just continue to wait. I'll just, you know, pump the brakes on quarterback and go back to other positions. Other times I'll use that as you know, a time to take two really solid guys back to back. You know, if in that example I miss out on Mariota, maybe that is the draft where I just take Rivers and Eli Manning back to back in two rounds and say, okay, these are the guys I'm generally going to rely on. These are my boring, you know, QB2s, QB, like borderline QB1 type of commodities. And I'll try to fill out like my QB3 spot with one other guy. That's generally how I look at it. In terms of how to pair them up, I think if you take one of the top guys, you know, Russell Wilson, Aaron Rodgers, those types of players, you really should wait, or you should strike immediately on another high-end QB1. Either try to set yourself up for a stars and scrubs or stars and streamers approach, or try to force the other drafters in your league to get worried about quarterback. And I think this is an interesting concept where if I am really hammering any one position, especially if other drafters around me are doing the same thing, then that puts a lot of pressure on the rest of the league to either keep up or gamble that they're not going to get screwed by waiting. And typically, in my experience, when you put that sort of pressure on your league mates, they will panic and they'll make, you know, suboptimal picks to make sure they don't miss out. I don't know if your experience lines up with that, Josh, but I feel like if you take a guy like Aaron Rodgers in the first and then you see Drew Brees in the second, it's not necessarily wrong just to load up on two elite quarterbacks.
Yeah, I have seen the same effect. I'm a little more hesitant to go that approach because even though, like, I really love what you're talking about, that you see the ripple effects of your moves. You want to be the stone going into the pond. You don't want to be the ones moving because of the ripples. You want to start these trends. I don't know that you have to do it twice, though. I think if you go early quarterback, that can start it. And you hope that from there, someone else makes the ripples go further of, okay, I'll take an early quarterback. Okay, I'll do it. Once you get to the second one, I have some bad experiences and don't know that I love being two early quarterbacks. I do think that it can put you in a rough spot at the other positions, just because I do think that quarterback is so replaceable. I'm not saying that it's never a good strategy, but I'm a little more cautious there than I am going one early quarterback.
I actually agree with you. I definitely tend to prefer a more balanced approach when it comes to, you know, positions relative to draft round. I'm not necessarily advocating for two elite quarterbacks, but again, depending upon the room you're drafting in, sometimes the value just may not be there at other positions. And, you know, if everyone else is hammering wide receivers in the first two rounds and you took Cam Newton at 101 and then it gets back to you at the turn for 2 and 3, and, you know, Russell Wilson is still there, go for it, man. Take him and some other position, maybe even a running back, and just say, okay, if everyone else is going to hammer wide receivers, I'm going to, you know, load up on these other positions that are being devalued. I feel like you can get more bang for your buck that way, but it's definitely draft dependent. I'm not necessarily advocating for this. If I'm advocating for anything, it's wait on quarterbacks. I want to make that very clear. But in general, I think that there are, depending upon the skill level of your league and the people you're drafting with, you can put people into poor mental capacities by, you know, making, you know, stronger plays for a certain position. And I think this actually comes up more with wide receiver right now than anything else. And I think we talked about this in our ADP, where just because Odell Beckham and Antonio Brown and Julio Jones are kind of consensus top five picks now, doesn't necessarily mean that all the guys who are behind them in the wide receiver ranks need to be drafted in the first round as well. But we're going way off topic here, off script. I want to move on and get to our QB spotlight. Josh, do you have anything else on these groupings that we've come up with or general, you know, quarterback draft strategy?
No, I think we covered it well, but it'll come back a lot when we get to draft strategy.
Okay, so we mentioned this at the top of the episode. Jimmy Garoppolo is our spotlight for the week, and we're going to call this Jimmy Garoppolo week because Sal's got an article coming up at 2QBs.com this week to profile Jimmy G and his prospects for the beginning of the 2016 season. I want to introduce a new little segment here that I'm going to tentatively call the QB finish game, where whenever we do one of these quarterback spotlights, I want to try to gauge where Josh and I are at, and, you know, any guest who happens to be on the podcast. I want to gauge where we're at on what we currently perceive that quarterback's value to be. And the way we're going to quantify that is with what we expect their, you know, their finish to be. So in the case of Jimmy Garoppolo, where is he going to finish 2016 in the quarterback rankings? Will he be, you know, QB 1? Will he be QB 45? Who knows? That's why we're going to guess. And I'll go first on the total points. We're going to do total points and points per game. But in general, Josh, I tried to develop a baseline to come up with my guess. And so I looked last year at two quarterbacks who only played four games. And I bring that up because, you know, as of this moment, Brady's suspension is supposedly going to be four games. And I want to assume, and I feel like I have to assume, that Brady is only going to miss that much time that in week five, assuming the suspension holds up, he'll come back and he'll start the rest of the games for the Pats. And, you know, Garoppolo's value will be tied to those first four games. And then any, you know, potential garbage time starts he gets in week 17 and week 16, maybe. So the quarterbacks I looked at from last year, and these are different cases because they're injury related, are Tony Romo and AJ McCarron. Each of these guys played four games last year. Romo scored about 69 points total. McCarron scored about 55. And that puts a range of like QB 35 to QB 45 in terms of where they landed. I don't have the exact numbers in front of me anymore. But for Garoppolo, my guess is that he finishes the season as QB 38. Do you want to say over under? Do you want to develop your own guess? What do you feel?
So we didn't talk about this in advance. QB 38 is what I have written down.
No way.
Yeah, that is. I think that's fair because assuming four games, I will assume there are several other quarterback situations where they mix and match their starting quarterbacks. And so someone, well, I will say it this way. I think that the four games Jimmy Garoppolo is going to get are going to be tough. They're going to play at Arizona and they're going to play the Texans at home. And then they have the Dolphins and the Bills, both of which could be tough, but are not quite as intimidating as the Cardinals and Texans. So I think that Jimmy Garoppolo has a tough but not ridiculous schedule. And so I think he'll put up four games that will be fine, but I do think that the Patriots will not function at Tom Brady levels. So I think he'll have kind of QB2-ish weeks on the high end, like QB15 type weeks. And I think that there will be plenty of other quarterbacks that play four games, five games, and do something similar. So I couldn't put him right there at like QB 33, 34, because I do think there's going to be several backups that play this year. I mean, every year there are. And so I think he'll be fine for the guys that play a few games, but I think the schedule is tough enough. I don't think he has enough experience to really come in and blow people away. I think that's about right, that he's not near the starters, like the reliable starters, and he lets a few backups pass him as well.
Yeah, I actually didn't look at the schedule at all, and that's my own fault, but after hearing what you just laid out, I may have bumped him down a spot or two to like 39 or 40, but we'll leave my guess at 38. I like that we just kind of randomly guessed the same number. That's fun. The next, you know, I'm going to call it a metric, but it's not really a metric, is a points per game finish. Now, this is always a dubious stat, right? Because points per game doesn't necessarily tell you how they finished in any given week relative to the other QBs. But it does give you an idea of what level of production you could expect on a game-to-game basis. You know, obviously certain guys are going to be more volatile than others, but it does seem like Garoppolo to me is the type of QB who would be a little less volatile, if only for the infrastructure that the Patriots have. Looking again at Romo and McCarron's numbers from last year, in Romo's four games, he averaged about 17 points per game, and McCarron averaged about 14. I think that provides like a good window, a good baseline, and I would probably skew more towards the McCarron side than the Romo side. But it is worth noting that Romo's numbers there did include the game where he got hurt and finished, I think, that week as QB 32. So he had three pretty good games and one terrible game, whereas McCarron was a little more even keeled through the four games that he started. So with that said, on a points per game basis, I put Garoppolo in that like 14 to 16 points per game range, and I'm going to guess that that puts him at QB 25 as far as points per game is concerned.
Yeah, I think that's probably fair. I'll just be honest that I don't know how good Jimmy Garoppolo is. I'm going to be very interested if he gets these four games, because I have, since he was drafted, made the argument that he's a good dynasty asset, just because we've seen that players that leave from under Tom Brady have a huge jump in value because the NFL thinks they're going to be amazing. And so I think he's going to see a gain in value at some point. What I don't know is how good he is on the field, though. And so I have a hard time projecting it. But just given the range you've given us, he is not Tony Romo. He doesn't have that experience. And we don't know if he is as bad as I believe AJ McCarron is. And so I think it's fair to say he's probably between the two, but closer to AJ McCarron. I probably say he's still QB 20. I probably take the under on yours, like around QB 27, QB 28.
Okay, that's fair. I mean, these are pure guesses, so we'll try to keep track of it. Maybe at the end of the year, we can have a contest to see who did better on these. But you bring up a good point in that we don't really know much about Jimmy Garoppolo, and I did a little bit of research, and courtesy of NFL.com, RotoWorld, Walter Football, I found some like scouting reports of him coming out of college. That was back in 2014, so of course we have to take a lot of this with a grain of salt, right? But we know that he went to a small school. In fact, he went to the same school as Tony Romo, Eastern Illinois. Pretty good size, 6'2", 225 pounds, but small hands, and apparently he has short arms, 9 1/4 inch hands, 31-inch arms. The sidebar, I'm a long-armed monster. I have like the wingspan of a 6'5" person, so suck at Jimmy Garoppolo.
And spoiler, he's not 6'5".
No, I am about 6 feet tall. I am very good at playing defense in basketball, and that's about it. But one thing that a lot of the scouting reports I read said about Garoppolo, and this kind of relates to his arm size, is that he has a compact and quick release, and he has pretty good timing. That makes sense. It's a lot easier to control small, feeble arms than it is to carry around these monstrosities that I've got. I'm a very clumsy person. Jimmy Garoppolo is a very precise person. He's apparently, an intelligent, hardworking, good in-game decision maker. But again, we haven't seen this on the field in the NFL. This is all based on small college results, right? One of the big knocks on him coming out of college was that his footwork needed help. But again, that was in 2014. He's had a lot of time since then, working with the Patriots coaching staff, working with Tom Brady to develop those skills. We do know that the Pats took him in the second round, and that's a team that, hashtag knows what it's doing, right? I don't know. I mean, it seems like the pedigree is there. The, the draft investment was there to say that Garoppolo is a good quarterback, but he's just had the misfortune of playing behind Tom Brady all this time. What percent chance would you give to Garoppolo unseating Brady if he's allowed to start these four games? Is it like 1%? Is it 5%?
I would love to see him Tom Brady, just Brady push Bledsoe out in a similar fashion. But I think it's pretty low odds. I think the team is too competitive this year. I think they know that they still are within their very small Super Bowl window. And I don't see a likelihood that Jimmy Garoppolo comes in and plays at last year's Tom Brady level, which I think is what it would take to bench Tom Brady. Sure, even if they think Jimmy Garoppolo is their quarterback of the future and he plays like he could be, I think they're still going to leave the legend, the soon-to-be Hall of Famer in there and compete for a Super Bowl rather than push him out. I don't think that they are as close to moving on as they would need to be. So I would say 2% to 5%. Yeah, right in that window. I would say that's probably the likelihood.
Yeah, and I think the point you brought up earlier is a really good one, in that the Patriots have this mystique about them, right? Where they drafted Matt Castle, they drafted Brian Hoyer, and then they flipped these guys into other assets. I don't even know if they got anything great for either of those guys in particular. I'd have to look that up. But in general, their value perceived on the Patriots was so much higher than what they actually turned out to be after they left, that it does go to show that Patriots, culture is a lot of what makes these guys valuable. And even if they invested a second round pick in Garoppolo, part of that might have just been Belichick saying, if we take this guy in the second pick, every other team is going to think he's great. And eventually he'll get a chance to, start a game or two, or in this case, maybe four games. And if we can make him look good, we can, turn him into another asset that we can flip to, maintain this dynasty that we've put together for however many years. I'm really intrigued to see how this Garoppolo situation plays out. And I'm really looking forward to reading Sal's article about Garoppolo because, yeah, we just have no idea what to expect. It's kind of fun. Usually there's a little bit more expectation with a lot of these quarterbacks who ascend to a starter status. But in Garoppolo's case, we just don't have that.
Yeah, it will be one of the most intriguing storylines, at least for me, in the first couple of weeks, is just to see who he really is.
Yeah. So let's stop there on Garoppolo. Be sure to check out Sal's piece at 2QBs.com. Let's get into the Twitter questions. The first one is from Rob C. He says, I'm in a league where I have the number one priority on draft slot. He says, I'd like to hear opinions for the optimum draft slot in 2QB leagues. Rob, I hate to say it, but I do not yet feel qualified to answer this question. And mostly that has to do with the fact that I don't have a ton of data yet. I don't have a ton of drafting experience. We just started doing these mock drafts at 2QBs.com. These are going to give me a lot more insight in terms of how I want to slot my draft position if I have a choice. I would generally say I want a high pick. That's my default stance in any fantasy sport any year, is that the closer I can pick to number one, the better off I am. But eventually I usually talk myself into, okay, well, maybe I don't want number one. Maybe I want number three or something like that, based upon who I view that, you know, the top three assets to be, and then what I can get in the third or and second round, right? Josh, where do you fall on this? Do you have a strong opinion on where you want to draft from?
No, hopefully he does not have to make this pick soon as far as his draft spot. If he said the time, the deadline, I missed it, but I don't have a strong opinion. My tendency is to like the back end of drafts, and just looking at things now, our early ADP says that that is where all quarterbacks, all elite quarterbacks not named Cam Newton are going. And so at the back end of the first round, looks like you would have your choice of Luck, Rodgers, Wilson, or a pretty good receiver or running back. And I would rather that so that I get the good pick in the second round. I tend towards the back end of the first, but I would agree with you that I want to see some more drafts play out. I want to see the ADP get a little more firm so that we know what it's going to look like before I made a decision if he has a later deadline. I wouldn't rush into that decision.
Yeah, and I think a lot of what you need to do is kind of figure out your own perception of the top 2 to 3 rounds of players. If you think that there's an elite level of talent that goes 15 players deep, then you essentially want, you know, the pick that's going to get you pick 15, right? And then whatever first round pick comes along with that. If you believe that that elite level is, you know, only 10 players deep, then you want to be in the top 10. That's going to vary from player to player and draft strategy to draft strategy. So do some mock drafts, figure out who you like and where they're going, right? And try to, you know, ascertain that stuff for yourself. The next question comes from Ryan Browers or Brewers. He says, what are your QB tiers? The position seems deeper this year. Also, when do you guys draft your QB1, QB2, and QB3? Ryan, thank you for the question. I would say you've already listened to our extensive thoughts on this through this episode. With that said, we will have some tiered rankings coming out relatively soon. I think June 1st is when we're really going to start ramping up our rankings, you know, all positions, overall rankings, tiered rankings, and keep an eye out for that at 2QBs.com. Quick answer is that for me, there's that top six. Then there's like a few guys after that, like 4 to 6 quarterbacks that I generally like as starting QBs or like QB1 types of players. And then after that, it's very homogenous for me. It sounds like, Josh, you have a few more guys in that top tier, correct?
Yeah, I do. I have 8 and then another tier 4 right after them, but I don't think we're too far off. I would agree with you. I think we largely covered this, but I would agree with him that the position does seem crazy deep.
Yeah, and in terms of when you draft them, it has a lot to do with, you know, trying to find value. And if you think that Russell Wilson is a value in the second round, which he very well might be, then you take him there. And if you think that that's too expensive, you wait and wait and wait until you get to a spot in your draft where in the moment there's a quarterback on the board where you say, this guy seems like he shouldn't be here still. I'm going to take him. That's generally my philosophy. Next question comes from Fantasy Bullseye. He says, 5-player mandatory 2QB keeper league. He says, QBs are in high demand. Pick 2 from Newton, Bortles, and Winston. Let's start there. He has a follow-up to that. But where are you at, Josh, on those 3 QBs?
So On those three, I guess I'll say it this way. In keeper leagues, I think that you just keep whoever is going to be the most expensive to reacquire. And so for me, Bortles and Winston, I don't view terribly far apart, but Bortles has a far higher ADP and has a much higher value. So I would keep Newton and Bortles. I mean, Newton is clear. So between Bortles and Winston, I would keep Bortles. And if you are not sold on him, see if you can move him once the rosters are set. But I wouldn't keep the cheaper option just because you want to be contrarian. I would stick pretty strongly to what's the cost to reacquire these guys.
Yeah, I tend to view keeper leagues in a different way. I like to highly prioritize just potentially elite talents. And I think that Winston has that profile more than Bortles does. And if I'm trying to decide between the two and the cost for keeping them is the same, then I want Winston, and I would keep Winston and Newton. His second part of the question says he also has Hopkins, Evans, Kelvin, Benjamin, and McCoy. And he says, do I keep two QBs? I think yes, you do. In terms of your other five keepers, I would just throw McCoy back. Yeah. What do you think, Josh?
Yeah, I don't think that McCoy is so good that you need to pass on a Bortles or Winston. I don't feel like you, in general, have to keep two quarterbacks in a keeper league, but just given his options, I'd choose one of them over McCoy. I'd agree.
I am with you. Next is from Sobchak Walter. It's a nice reference. I'm not sure if there's supposed to be a comma in there for Walter Sobchak, but he says, I'm in a startup 2QB dynasty 14-team league. What strategy would you suggest for the startup draft? That is a very broad question. Any general thoughts, Josh?
I'd pick good players.
Oh, good idea.
Yeah. I think we've covered it in past episodes, but just for Dynasty, I have kind of two main things. One, I don't care about running backs at all. They're good, sure, but they're going to age out quickly, and they are prone to injury. So I want to go wide receiver and quarterback. And although I tend towards late-round quarterback, maybe not as much as you do, Greg, but I also am of the opinion that quarterbacks in a dynasty league are at their cheapest in the startup draft, that once the teams are established, it is very difficult to trade for a quarterback. You have to pay an arm and a leg. So I do tend to go quarterback a little earlier than I may like, just because it does tend to be the cheapest time to acquire them.
Yeah, my general philosophy on this, and I'm a budding dynasty player, I still have yet to actually play a season of 2QB dynasties, so take all of this with a very large grain of salt. But I'm with Josh in the sense that I do believe wide receivers should be your number one priority, because running backs are so fickle and because QB is so deep. And what Josh says is true, that once you do have the quarterbacks on your roster, I took over a team in a league that Josh commissionates
all of the above.
You do a lot of stuff for that league, Josh. I know that when I look at my roster and I see the quarterbacks that I have, I can feel comfortable knowing that I have them. And so when Josh sends me a trade offer for those guys, it's a lot harder to fathom giving up an Andrew Luck or a Drew Brees, or even, you know, a guy who has a solid starting job like Joe Flacco. You could say, okay, I want to trade for Joe Flacco. And as the Flacco owner, I might think to myself, well, yeah, I'd like to get something for him. But at the same time, like, I intentionally did not invest a whole lot in quarterback, and Flacco is the result of that. And do I need to stay true to that? Do I need to hold on to Flacco, or do I need to move him and try to develop some other part of my roster? I'm thinking out loud here, but in general, I think you prioritize wide receiver, but make sure that you can fill a competitive lineup from year one on. Like, don't punt year one to get young players. These are the philosophies that I'm coming at Dynasty with. We'll see how it goes. I'm still learning.
Yeah, and just with the fielding competitive rosters, I will note that it is much easier to find a running back that comes out of nowhere than to find a quarterback that comes out of nowhere, because Dynasty rosters are so deep that many backups are going to be rostered. And so don't assume you will be able to just pick them off waivers.
Well, and that parallels what we talked about earlier with quarterbacks that are essentially unownable. It's like, if a quarterback does come out of nowhere in Dynasty, it's probably because they are very, very bad, right?
It's true. So Brandon Whedon got some starts last year. He was not owned in many leagues.
Dear Lord, Brandon Whedon. Ancient Brandon Whedon. Mr. Sobchak, I'd say keep tuning into the podcast. A lot of these types of questions are these broader questions. You kind of, I hate to say it, but you kind of just have to feel them out over time. You have to play enough. You have to do mock drafts. You have to listen to, you know, podcasts. You have to read articles. Just take in as much data as you can. Assimilate that into your own, you know, method of how you play and see if it works. If it works, keep doing it. If it doesn't work, you know, back to the drawing board, try some different approaches. And even that isn't as cut and dry as I just made it out to be. Is, you know, maybe variance is what screwed you. Maybe, you know, you made the right plays and it just didn't work out. It's that's why fantasy is great. But yeah, my number one piece of advice there is to, in terms of what strategy I suggest for the startup draft is educate yourself, become a sponge for information, you know, use our podcast, use other resources to figure out what you think is going to work and do that. Our last question comes from John Boot. He says, how do you see QB values and ranks compared with running back, wide receiver, and tight end? Not separate QB ranks and tiers. He says, inclusive ranks of all positions. Now, this is another one of those broad questions. What I'm going to say to you, John, is what I'm going to say basically to every other person who asks a question along these lines is check out our overall rankings when they do come up in the beginning of June. We're going to try to have all that stuff ready to go by June 1st. That'll show you where we value quarterbacks relative to the other positions. Overall, though, there are a lot of different ways to win. We outline that on the site as well. You don't have to take QB early, but you can. You don't have to take a QB late, but you can. Josh, do you have any, you know, simple, quick takes on this?
No, I think that's right, and I think it's kind of a lousy answer, but check back with us in June when we really start getting the full draft prep going and talk a lot more about how we see these players stacking up.
Yeah, I don't think it's a lousy answer. I just think it's a very difficult question to answer in the span of, you know, a Twitter question on a podcast. So thank you for the question, John. But I hate to, you know, put you in a holding pattern, but come back at the end of the month and we'll have more for you on that. Josh, we're done.
That was some good stuff. I enjoyed the conversation about quarterbacks and tearing them off.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. We went a lot longer than I thought we would. But like I said, I think that just goes to show that it's interesting stuff. A good conversation. With that, why don't you let the listeners know how they can find your work, find you on social media and all that?
Sure. Let's do it. I'm on Twitter a lot. I am at Lake2QBs. And combined, we are all at 2QBs. So a couple of different accounts, my personal one and then our site one that we all kind of tweet through. Those are the easiest places to interact with us. But just as far as my writing, 2QBs.com is where we are going to be having lots of good stuff. We already have, but particularly now as we get into the summer and the off season, there should be lots more all the time.
Yep. I am on Twitter not nearly as often as Josh, but you can find me on there at Greg Sauce. You can send longer form questions or comments to us by email, 2QBs@gmail.com. That's TWOQBS for basically every time we say 2QBs. That's how you have to spell it out. I want to urge you one more time to please rate and review the podcast on iTunes, because if you do, you might get a free entry into the Scott Fishbowl, and that would be super sweet for you. Trust me. I can't wait to play in it. I can't wait to, you know, see how our listeners do, or our one lucky listener, I should say. But who knows? Maybe some of you get in by other means. With that said, that's it for this episode. Thank you all for hanging out for a bit of a long ramble, but it's been a good time. Josh, thank you for your time as well. I know it's a bit later in your home state, but we'll catch you next time on the 2QB Experience. Adios.